Welcome back, everybody, to Is This a Ghost? I am Clayton Smith, and every single week, except for when we don't do it, I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who does not take it real seriously.
But you know what I do take real seriously, though? Summer break. It's sacred. So
it's as of year three in the podcast.
Yes, we've correct.
Yeah. Summer break is sacred. It's
three is the holiest number. So I don't know why.
That is true. If it's good enough for the Trinity, it's good enough for us in this podcast. So we just took 3 weeks off. Again, three and three.
I'm really excited. Next week, four weeks off. So
there were a lot of listeners who wrote in and they said, it's okay that you guys are taking a break, which I thought was very magnanimous of them. They said, but you are coming back, right? And I said, I don't know. Yeah, probably. I think so. I don't know. We'll see. We've never done this before. But we are back. We're so back. And now, at long last, Patrick, we are launching into season two.
Yes! Oh, my God. Right into sweeps. So excited.
I had a whole list of things I wanted to talk about, but it got too long. So we're going to have to narrow it down to just a few things, maybe like even lightning round style. Like, what did you do on your vacation? How did it go?
It was fine.
Anything you want to talk about or no?
No, we had a really fun time. It was good. We went to a Latin American country. I think can I say it on the podcast?
Are you not going to tell them which one?
We went to Panama, right? Went to Panama, yeah. Whole family, whole
I wasn't invited. I will note, but
right, yeah, my family, not like
our
no, not our no, our we didn't family. Go. No,
you, the trust, interns and I are pretty upset that we were not invited.
I get it. I think you'll feel a little differently in about 5 minutes, though. So we went and we had a good time. We saw a bunch of really neat things, right? We swam in crystal clear oceans, which kids have never seen before, which made me feel like trash. They were like, oh, what's all this stuff down at the bottom? Oh, that's the sea floor. You've never seen that before, have you? Okay.
Not until mom wanted to go somewhere cool with a good ocean. Thanks, Dad.
This is like those sandals commercials on Gumball. Yeah, I know. It's the sandals commercials. We got to do it. We went to the Panama Canal. That was really exciting. We rode a boat, a little tiny, not a tiny boat, but a good-sized boat. A boat big enough that they serve breakfast on the boat.
Which was it a tiny boat or a good-sized boat? Because you're, I don't know, you're. This is the story's falling apart very quickly here.
So everything's relative in the Panama Canal. Most of the other ships there are the size of the Empire State Building on its side. So we were on a building, or on a, excuse me, a boat smaller than that.
See, okay. It's still falling apart. Falling apart even further. Right.
But again, boat with breakfast, that's big boat. Big boats at breakfast.
Yeah.
I think. So we get into the Panama Canal. And you get into the lock, right? The lock is what they call it, the little vessel.
Goes up and down?
Yeah. And so we start going up, and the boat next to us, because there's a couple boats in there, the boat next to us fucking body checks us, okay?
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Big one. Big, like a good-sized boat.
That's probably pretty scary, huh?
A little bit, because we hear like a crunching and crashing from downstairs in our boat, and we thought,
okay.
I thought, well, this is like a random Tuesday. I'm sure this is like a normal thing. So I peeked my head downstairs, and a bunch of the windows in the lower end of the boat are all just smashed in, right where everyone's trying to eat breakfast. So I don't think that's normal.
That's probably not as abnormal as you would expect.
You would think. Yeah. That was like the least exciting thing that happened on the trip, because what else happened? So we were in the rainforest hiking, which I felt really bad because as soon as we finished the hiking portion of this day, Gloria turned to me and she goes, can we just do this on every vacation? I said, what? She goes, this, whatever this is. Can we just do this?
I said, this is- I've seen textbooks. Is this nature? Yeah. It's great.
I said, yeah, this is just called hiking. We can do this like literally anywhere you want to. It's totally fine. I mean, we could even do this back home, I promise. Having a great time. We're having a great time right up until a little homicidal tamarin monkey comes out of nowhere and decides
it probably comes out of the jungle where you're in his home, my friend.
This is a good point.
So I'm sure came out of nowhere.
I'm sure the little tamarin monkey is thinking to themselves, these five big white motherfuckers come out of nowhere. And so he leaps on my children and he starts to scratch and bite my children.
That's fun.
It's really fun. It's a really exciting part of the rainforest is when it fights you. So
this is the version. This is the Midwestern white person version of owning a yacht in the ocean where the killer whales come after you.
Yes, correct. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
nature it's, is yeah. Nature's had enough.
Yeah, it's just like this, except we're on a Groupon. So it's So okay. So that happens, and we think this is bad, right? Like,
yeah, not good.
We hadn't seen any other monkeys that were like, you know, picking people out of a crowd, and this one was. So we thought, well, that seems like a bad monkey, like a bad seed. Mm-hmm. So we go back, right? Go back home. You know, we're done with the monkey with the rainforest.
You just let the monkey go. Didn't like eat its brain.
No, it's a wee monkey. It's very wiry. There was no catching this monkey.
I don't know if you've seen Temple of Doom, but those. You can eat the brain of a wee monkey.
It wasn't this. Not this. This monkey.
Chill it.
This monkey
saw cleanly around the scalp and just lifted off.
In retrospect, that would have been a lot cheaper way to handle this situation. I'll tell you that much. So we get back into Panama City, and you know, the kids, they're complaining a little bit about being attacked
about
by wildlife,
eaten by a monkey.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. So so we decide, hey, we should probably get these kids checked out for, you know, monkey diseases, right? Rainforest
sure.
diseases, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The big R.
Monkeypox. That's yeah. one I've heard of.
Yeah, the big R. Monkeypox, exactly. So so Amy takes the kids to the children's hospital there and says, hey, we want to get our kids checked out for rabies. You know, because it's this animal came out of nowhere and attacked them and then it ran back into the rainforest. And we're like, this is like on the rabies like box.
Yeah,
this is the
old
example
Yeller
story.
2
absolutely
lost in the jungle.
Yeah. <That's> exactly.
Yeah.
And the doctors there, they say, "Ah, you know what? Good news. We don't have rabies in Panama." And we said,
"Wow, that is great news."
We said, "Wow, that is incredible news. How do you know this incredible what do you know that the rest of the world doesn't know?" And they said, "Rabies is only in bats." And we said, "Wow, that's also not correct."
Has science made it to Panama? They've got so many people going through there from other countries.
So
someone has been a scientist.
You would figure. And so we said we would really like some sort of like the rabies vaccine for these children that have been, you know, bitten by wildlife. And they said, don't have it at all. Doesn't exist.
Why would they? No bats. No bats in Panama City.
Yeah. You clearly described a monkey. You said it flew out of the tree, but I think what you mean is that it jumped out of the tree. So not a bat. And
and let me tell you something, by the way, we're in Virginia, mm-hmm. and in Virginia, I see a lot of bats.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure they do have bats in mm-hmm. Panama City. Yeah. They absolutely must.
Yeah. And so like you would think, you know, logically, if you know that there's rabies in bats and that bats bite things, couldn't things also have rabies?
No, because those things are not bats.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, so we said, well, this is bad news. This is bad news, right? We're 72 driving hours from home, as Stella pointed out. We're not driving anyway, but she wanted to point out, like, you could drive home from here. Right. And they said, well, we can check with the other hospitals. I don't know of any hospitals in Panama that have a rabies treatment. We just don't have it down here. And we said, again, not any confidence at all. They said, you know what you could do? You could call a bunch of rural hospitals in Panama tomorrow, and you could see what they have to say about it. And I said,
that's a good idea.
I said, that's
a good idea.
That's a great idea for someone with more time than I have. I'll be honest with you.
How long does it take rabies to kind of like get its claws in?
Days. Like, you know.
So you could have waited a day.
Sure. Yeah. But in children, less. So, so we just started booking flights back home. We said, we got to get home, right? The kids, they're pretty important, you know, generally, legally.
Yeah.
We got to get home. There's only two tickets the next day in all of Panama City to get back into the States. Every other flight sold out. There's only two tickets.
So right? You have to choose which child you love the most.
So I know they always say, like, you can't choose which child you love the most, but at some point in your life,
it turns out
you may have to choose which of your child is more monkey damaged. So So, you know, so June draws the long straw. And so she and I, she and I fly home the next day. I also decide I want to leave. So I go with
So you volunteer quickly to be the adult.
Yeah. Yeah. Stella's like, I could just take June home. I was like, no. I also want to go home. So, so June and I fly back home the next day. Which, by the way, let me tell you, middle-aged dude with a scared-ass 6-year-old white child trying to fly around Latin America by themselves, you get to talk to a lot of people. A lot
How of exciting. People. Do they look official?
They do look official. All of them do. Lots of guns. So, but we get out of Panama.
Sorry, something just
Did
dropped.
You poop a little bit? Oh, okay.
Not like from above.
New basement, new shit falling out of the ceiling. I get it.
Sorry to interrupt.
Mm. Did you turn on a flashlight? What are you?
I'm looking at the floor. It's so dark in here. The neon light only goes so far. I don't know. Okay. Well.
Okay. All right. Continue. And we come back from intermission, and so we're flying through, and we end up getting into Atlanta, and then from Atlanta we're going to connect through to St. Louis. I will note, we flew through Atlanta the day before the sewage pipe erupted in Terminal T and filled the entire terminal with human sewage. So,
boy, I missed that.
Day before that, by the way. So we fly back. So we're on the flight from Atlanta back home. Mm-hmm. We're in the home stretch. As soon as we land, we're going to go to the hospital, all this kind of stuff. So we get up to cruising altitude, and as soon as we do, the pilot comes on the intercom and he's like, hey, if anybody has medical experience, can you please come to the back of the plane? And a guy gets up and he goes back there. And then about 10 minutes later, they're like, if anybody has experience with like this specific thing, can you come to the back of the plane? And then Tim is like, if anybody has like a diabetic kit on board, if they could come to the back of the plane. And if anybody, it gets more and more alarming.
Now, are people responding to these calls?
No, at some point they run out of experts on this commuter flight from Atlanta to St. Louis. And I'm like, well, this seems bad for the, you know, for the person involved. And I look back and it's a flight attendant. It's a flight and she is down.
It's one of the worst people to be down on a plane.
Exactly. Like the pilot,
quite the pilot. Yeah.
Right. He's still coming on and chit chatting a little bit, but the flight attendant,
he's having a good time.
Yeah. He's still, yeah. But she's down back there and they've got like the little pads on her chest with the box hooked up to it. They've got like a drip bag and the oxygen. And I'm thinking this is no bueno. Right. And not to mention, you know, the flight attendants, they're still trying to, you know, kind of keep the peace, but you know, they're one of their own is down and they're trying to, you know, there's a doctor back there, you know, working on her and everything. And finally,
there's no credentials. You could just say like, yes, I am a doctor.
Yeah.
They don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
it's crazy.
Yeah. It's not like the exit row where they like come around like, are you a doctor? No, I'm 6. Are you a doctor? No. We get about over Nashville and they idle the plane back and they emergency land in Nashville. Paramedics come rush on board. They, you know, drag the flight attendant off. Doesn't look great, you know, from what I can tell. Again, not a doctor, as we've discussed, but doesn't look great. And the flight attendants are ashen, obviously. And you know,
so how was the drink service?
So in my head, I'm thinking to myself, this seems bad, right? But I was kind of first with the medical emergency. So,
yeah, you didn't announce it though. That's your problem.
I know that's okay. So again, lessons for everyone listening.
Correct.
If you're in some sort of like medical rush to get home to save a child, you got to get dibs. There's a dibs system.
There's dibs
when you check in. And I didn't use the dibs system, but, and they're talking about, well, you know, we're gonna try and refuel and find a chance to get you guys back home tonight, but we might need to rebook and I'm panicking obviously. And you know, and the flight attendants, they're just like, you know, moping all around the up and down the aisle. And they're like, you know, if we can help you with anything, please. And I kind of flagged the guy down. I was like, man, I are you guys still going to do the beverage service? Or? And And it was not because they brought like waters and sun chips for everybody.
Yeah, and that's when they threw you out of the plane.
Yeah,
like, well, this is not going to be helpful.
So, but you know, so they, but then we took back off and we got home. And just so you know, if something like that happens on your plane, if somebody, mm-hmm. you know, doesn't make it, 90-minute delay. Just that's about what you can expect.
Wait,
90 minutes.
Did she die?
I don't know. They didn't come back on the intercom to update us.
Okay.
But
I think that means she died probably because they definitely would have applauded her, right? Like even if she weren't there, if she was not, they were like, she's okay, she's gonna be fine.
Yeah,
and everyone would be like, woo.
Yeah.
So the fact they didn't, I think it
didn't look great. Like when you get pulled off a plane with your like open mouth hanging down to your chest.
Yeah,
doesn't look good. So anyway. But yeah, so we made it back in the
town. How's your kid?
Everyone's cool. Everyone's in great shape.
Oh, good. Got the vaccine.
Got the shots just mm-hmm. in time. Everyone's feeling good. So yeah, that was my excitement. That was my fun.
That's cool.
What'd you do?
Well, how long has this been going on? We're going to have to spread out our updates, I think, over the next 7 episodes because this has been, too long. So, thank you for asking. Next time it'll be my turn to share some stuff. I have a really good story about a cell phone, actually, which is not as dire as your child having rabies or a flight attendant.
Absolutely captivating.
I know it doesn't sound good when you say it like that, like it's a story about a cell phone, but it's really good. And I have
a story about a boil. Ah, you're going to love it. Yeah. You're going to love it.
I think with some distance mm-hmm. from this story,
yeah,
people will appreciate it eventually.
You bought a new house, though. That is also a very severe thing to do.
Did buy a new house, mm-hmm. And in some ways, the cell phone story is part of it. It's mm-hmm. they're intertwined.
Yeah,
And I'm in, as you can see, if you're watching on the YouTube, mm-hmm. you can see I'm in a new space and I'm back in a basement, and it feels pretty good. Feels pretty good. It looks pretty bad, but it feels pretty good. I was thinking the other day, actually, like. We took a break for 3 weeks to take some space and just like have a refresher and like mm-hmm. calm a bit. While
yeah,
I'm
learn
moving,
to love each other again.
Vacation, I remember to love each other again. About yeah, it. Yeah. And you weren't listening as usual, and I don't know if this is going to work. But I got here and I thought, as I'm sitting in my basement now, I'm thinking like, actually, this is the most comfortable and calm I've felt in the last 3 weeks because not only am I in a basement where people mm-hmm. don't normally come, but they especially don't come down here when doing stuff mm-hmm. and it's the most quiet fun time I've had since moving to a new house.
That's wonderful.
So I like it, but stay tuned next week for my cell phone story, which I want to say again is so much better than the title of it sounds. really is
pins and needles.
So come on back, y'all.
Pins and needles.
I think we have to get to this story. And before we do, I just want to make some notes. So this week we have a story that was written by one of our listeners.
Hey, all right. Getting right back into the thick of it here.
Not right doing back into it, which is perfect timing because I was thinking like, I'm so excited we're doing the podcast again. But that means I have to do some research. And as I was thinking that, Caroline Jones swooped in, the angel of life. What I call her mm-hmm. now as of this second, because I didn't think of it, think it through very well. But she swooped in, as she often does, and she sent me a whole script. And it's great, and I say that as someone who has not read it.
Mm. Can't wait.
So this is going to be another one of those episodes where we're both discovering the story together in real time.
Dual audience surrogates. It's the best.
It is the best. And thank you so much to Caroline Jones. You know, Caroline this is her like fourth or fifth story she's done for mm-hmm. us. And every single one of her stories is an absolute banger. I don't know where she finds this shit because it never comes up in my Google searches. She must have, she's like a special UK Google.
Must.
It's like China Google, but
yeah.
but cooler and I don't know, older.
She's the type of Google you have to have an ID to get on. That's the kind of Google that she has.
That's probably true.
Do we need to get her like a jacket or something for being the Five Timers Club, or
quote
the Four or Five Timers Club? We don't know.
I think the Four or Five Timers Club is a good one.
Okay.
I should note, just so she gets her due. I also got another listener sent a script.
Oh,
Our Amity. We talked about Amity a few weeks, few episodes back.
Yeah, from Jaws. Yeah, I remember Jaws. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She also sent in a story. Now, I will say, and I'll message Amity this separately, so it's not like she's getting put on blast for the first time in front of all our listeners. But Amity's script, I did start reading. So far, so good. But there's a lot of, she wrote like her own jokes.
Oh no.
Yeah, which is like, I
it's so helpful for you because you're not very funny. But
yeah, but like my brand is not being funny, and if I start doing good jokes, I think we might lose some listeners. So I have to go through and I have to strip out her good jokes and replace them with my dad jokes.
Mm.
So that's it. But
good news is she gets all those back free of charge.
That's right. They're coming back. Mm-hmm. So thank you also, Amity. But this week we're going to go with Caroline Jones and her story. And gosh, any questions, concerns, anything you want to kind of preface for, you know, preview something for season two now that we're on the cusp?
I got about 10 more minutes of material here. Do you think there's time? Or
I don't. I really don't. Or we could do this. We could keep doing the stories part, and this could be the first episode that's not ghosts.
We were going to do that on April 1st, I think.
I think we have two or three more years before April 1st lands on a Wednesday, and ooh, that's going to be, I think. So, you know, everyone forget that we said that. God knows we probably will. All right, let's just get to the story, yeah? It's a gross one.
Really loud.
It's a new setup. Oh boy, Frances Dashwood was born in London in December 1708.
Mm-hmm.
He was the only son of Sir Francis Dashwood,
mm-hmm,
who was the first Baronet Dashwood.
The Baronet?
Like, so
on,
this,
like on Radio City Music Hall, or
yeah,
with the kicks.
I had to look at this up as well, actually, because I did read the first paragraph and I thought, I'm already lost. I don't know these fucking Brits. But I did. A baronet is, it's lower than a baron,
right?
But
above an oboe, right?
Better than an oboe. it's solidly woodwind,
mm-hmm, absolutely, yeah,
but not baron level woodwind.
It's a reed instrument. I get that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
How many baronets in UK history do you think were named Reed? Because that would be that would be fun. That'd be just a fun thing. Probably just now, not then, but still fun. Anyway, so first Baronet Dashwood, where are we at here? Francis Dashwood, born to Sir Francis Dashwood and his second wife Mary Fane.
Mm-hmm.
The elder Saint Francis, nope. St. Francis was out there having sex with all the hoes, and he had so many kids. That's why he liked animals so much, because he's like, all these kids need a dog. Got to get a dog for each kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he became the patron saint of animals. People don't know that, but that's how it worked. The elder Sir Francis was one of three brothers who had all made a fortune importing silk and other luxury goods to England.
Mm.
Sir Francis, the elder, was an assistant of the Royal African Company, which I assume is a shipping company.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's a Jack Sparrow-style pirate shipping
absolutely
company.
Absolutely.
And he was also, a director of the East India Company, which definitely was in Pirates of the Caribbean. So, And let's see. We have here, yay, colonialism. He also added to his wealth by marrying four times to wealthy women.
Mm. Well, hey, they were getting something out of it too. Know what I mean?
What? What do you mean?
They were getting that baronet.
Putting their mouth in that reed, huh?
Probably not.
No, I don't think so. You're rich, you don't have to do that.
You have to do any of that stuff.
So, he marries four times, all to wealthy women, and he gets their wealth. And I don't know, Caroline did not put in like what happens to the women in these marriages. I don't know if there's divorce. I think divorce is pretty hard back then. Mm-hmm. So did they die? Did they die under mysterious circumstances?
Mm-hmm.
Was he like, I need more wealth?
Are they in four different countries, maybe? Four different languages, pretty
easy.
Man,
that sounds bang, bang, so bang, fucking bang stressful.
I guess.
How would you visit four different countries?
You work for a shipping country.
I know, but you know how long it... I mean, okay, I'm sorry. How is wrong? How long would it take you to visit each of your families? If you wanted to do a circuit where you see each of your families,
right,
and they all are, each one of them is like a shipping distance away,
right?
That's got to be a 9-year round trip journey.
Yeah, but by the time you get back to the first one, you're like, hey, forgot about you.
I remember you. Anyway, so with all the wealth he accumulates from this marriage scheme, he's able to acquire his own baronetcy. Oh, that's how he becomes a baronet. Baronet. Mm. He gets a baronetcy.
Mm-hmm.
Baronetcy.
Okay.
Baron at baronetcy.
Yeah, baron of Etsy.
Baronetcy.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes a baron, and mm-hmm. he retires to the life of a country gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Does a baronet come with like a salary?
I mean, he's doing okay.
He's got yeah. four families. He's spending so much money. Does a baronet earn a salary for being a baronet? We should have a sound effect for like when we use ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, hey, can we get a sound effect for ChatGPT use?
Yeah, like a real loud fart.
We already have one of those, and it's not for that. A baronetcy in the UK is a hereditary honor sitting below barons but above us knighthoods. As I said, ChatGPT and I on the same page as per usual. It's social prestige. It does not come with a stipend, duties, or financial benefits.
Mm.
So
no longer interested.
Anyway, so he retires. The three brothers. Three brothers? I'm already lost. Three brothers.
He had brothers, right?
Oh, yeah. He was one of three brothers.
Yeah.
Boy.
This Do not make me explain the story to you.
The three brothers had bought an estate at West Wickham, and thank you, Caroline. By the way, she has ascended to a rank of my favorite Brit because she put a phonetic spelling of Wickham. I would have said Wycombe, and then everyone would have laughed in that dumb new fucking WhatsApp channel that we have just for UK listeners.
They would have spit their biscuits, Clayton. They would have absolutely spit their biscuits.
They'd have spit their biscuits and shat their bloomers. But I do want to promote that, actually. Sally asked a lot of times if I would. So if you're in the UK, by the way, there's Sally McGregor, our favorite Mad Scott, has put together a WhatsApp group for all of y'all over there. And if I remember when I post this, I will put the link to that WhatsApp group in the episode details. So check there. And if it's not there, I have forgotten. Don't bother me again. Anyway, it's actually a pretty fun group. There's a lot of surprisingly a lot of people there, and they get wild. Okay. Anyway, about 30. They buy an estate in West Wickham. This is going to be it's going to go forever. Huh? About 35 miles northwest of London. And in 1702, Francis bought out his brothers and becomes a sole owner.
Mm-hmm.
And he sets about building a handsome red brick house on the estate.
As you do.
As one does. Now, the younger Sir Francis, who Caroline notes here, is the main character of our story, was only 2 years old when his mother died. And he was not quite 16 when his father died.
Oh, okay.
So you know what that means?
Mm-hmm.
Money. He inherits all of his father's property, all of his father's money, and he's rich, and he's fucking very wealthy.
Yeah.
While he was still a minor, his maternal uncle, the Earl of Westmoreland, acts as his guardian for several years. Now, at this time, it was very common for wealthy young English noblemen to go on what is called the Grand Tour.
Ah, the little Rumspringa action here.
Little Rumspringa, exactly.
Little Rumspringa. I see how this works.
Little Rumspringa.
If you don't come back with four wives, you ain't doing it right.
Four wives and nine diseases. So they go on the Grand Tour, which was a trip of several months across Europe, which was meant to complete their education. By exposing them, and I assume their genitals, to other cultures, particularly Italy.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. With all its Roman antiquities and Renaissance art and hot babes.
Mm-hmm.
Was supposed to give them an appreciation of classical culture. Obviously, the trip also allowed them to indulge in youthful excesses while safely a long way from home. Amen. So in 1726, the age of 17, young Francis makes his first trip abroad. He spends 8 months in France and Germany. And then that's very fun for him. 3 years later, he does it again. He sets off again. And this time he goes to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
I'm back again. I'm here.
It's me.
Francis. I love the frescoes. Show me the frescoes.
Hey, you got the spicy meatball. I want the spicy meatball of the fresco.
I want to take my finger. I want to touch the Michelangelo. Hey.
Hey, it's so high on the ceiling. Get me up there. You got the ladder? Get me up on the ceiling. Touch the Michelangelo. Which is what he said. Mm-hmm. And then he stays in Florence and Rome for 3 years. Now, as was intended, he very much appreciated the art and the culture of Italy. Obviously. And he indulged himself greatly with wine, women, and general excess. The fucking 1%.
I know, right?
Must be nice. How's your toilet situation?
Oh. Done.
I want to say, now that I'm in the basement, I don't know if you can see this, so I can do this. See my washer dryer over there?
I do.
In the dark, but yeah.
Pretty sweet.
Laundry, huh? Friends. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. He also becomes fascinated by the elaborate costume and ritual of the Roman Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
He finds it attractive, but also decides he likes to satirize it.
Sure.
Seems fine and good.
Pretty easy, actually.
It's easier than you'd think. While he was in Rome, the Pope dies and
oh, no.
Francis becomes the Pope. It's crazy. He dies, and Francis and his friends staged a mock conclave to elect another. Francis dressed himself up as an aged cardinal with a trembling voice and intoned prayers, quote, which were certainly not in the ritual. And this is what the movie, what's the Euro trip is based on.
Okay.
See, Euro Trip?
I don't know. Did that involve the Pope?
It involved... Here's what I remember from Euro Trip. It's one scene, and it's someone, maybe DJ Qualls or someone of that ilk, going like this and raising the roof while wearing the Pope's hat, which I think is on fire at the time.
Okay. Yeah, that does sound like Euro Trip.
Yeah. So, it's the same.
And I think Stifler's in that scene, too. Pretty sure Stifler's in there.
It would make sense. And probably his mom is there somewhere. It
has to be.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's see. Where are we here? So then he goes back to England and he founds a club called the Society of Dilettante, which is for wealthy and cultured gentlemen who wanted to promote the appreciation of classical art and taste in England.
Okay.
Sounds fucking insufferable.
But not the food. No, not the food.
Never the food.
Absolutely not.
So this was the official purpose, and indeed it did sponsor the publication of some important books. However, it was at least as much a dining and drinking club. Oh, there we go. So yes, the food. If it ain't white, get it off the plate. Yeah. Potato,
has it been, has it been boiled? No. Well, then boil it.
And fuck off. So this quickly gains a reputation for excess, which sounds pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
A contemporary wrote that, quote, the normal qualification for membership is having been in Italy, and the real one is being drunk.
Well, sign me up. I've done both of those things.
The two chiefs are Lord Middlesex and Sir Francis Dashwood, who are seldom sober the whole time they were in Italy. Why go to Italy if you're going to be sober?
Yep.
Doesn't make any sense. So a year after returning to England, Francis accompanies one of his friends on a diplomatic mission to the Russian court at St. Petersburg.
Ooh.
Which was to result in a trade treaty. Russia's first ever commercial treaty with a foreign power. And what you want for that is someone who is a drunk asshole. Yeah. Francis keeps a diary of the trip, which shows genuine interest in the way in which Russia was governed. However... While there, he also impersonated the King of Sweden and attempted to seduce the Russian Empress. On his return, he wrote that Russia was, quote, worth any curious man's going to see once. But that once curiosity is satisfied, I think one would amuse oneself better in more southern climates.
Hmm.
You could bang the Empress if you wish. Jesus. So then he went, of course, back to Italy.
Sure.
Which was a southern climb.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, during the week before Easter, when the Sistine Chapel was full of the faithful, Francis, you're not going to believe it, dressed up as a night watchman to gain admission to the chapel. And while he could buy it. He could buy admission.
Sure.
Certainly.
Right.
But this feels more fun.
Mm-hmm.
While inside, he produces a horsewhip with which he scourges the penitents until they beg for mercy.
Okay. Sure.
Now, I have some questions.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Catholic church, so this is only half unexpected.
But yeah, I mean, some ascetics in Christianity...
Like, no, I'm supposed to be whipping myself, not you. No, I do it to me.
You go there to, you know, throw yourself on the floor and sob and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but like, the real person comes up to whip you, you're like, oh, how convenient.
Yeah.
I was hoping this would get real. So he does that. He just horse whips people for a while. And then he travels more, visiting Greece and Turkey and possibly even Egypt.
Mm.
This time when he comes back home, he sets up another club called the Divan Club.
Mm-hmm.
And this time the qualification for membership was having visited the Ottoman Empire.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So that feels like a play on words.
Next, the Chase Lounge. That's where we'll be hanging out.
That's where the club meets. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. This was, of course, another drinking and dining society. Members loved to dress up in Eastern costume while they partied. And actually, Caroline, one of her the many things she's done so nicely for us, is she has submitted some photos that she herself and her husband have taken.
Oh,
so
hey.
All the photos that we have tonight are from Caroline's camera and her husband's camera.
Excellent. So they're not 10,000 years old. That's good to hear.
They're not 10,000. Now, this is a picture of a 10,000-year-old thing.
Well,
this is Francis dressed up in his quote-unquote Eastern costume. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Boy, that's a happy little boy. That's a happy boy.
What does he have to be worried about? He's living the best life.
I love the half-liter goblet of red wine as well. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a lot. It's full to the brim.
Yeah. Hey! Yeah.
This is the biggest goblet these little fingers could hold.
Do you like it's actually a shot glass size, but it looks huge in my little hands. So that's our boy. Just having so much fun. Let's see. So back here. Okay. So then he returns to England. Francis, he carries on with the task he has already started, which is enlarging and remodeling the red brick house that his father had built.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to make it into a classical mansion. And I believe, despite all the noises coming down the stairs above, that I have a picture of the mansion. Let's see here.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, so pastoral.
So pastoral. And there's a closer one. It's a big house.
Wow. Okay.
It's a lot of which columns are these?
Those appear to be Doric columns.
Yeah, you know I can't check this on the fly.
I know. I always say Doric, but I don't really know if that's it. maybe Greek Revival. Could be Greek Revival.
It's not. I don't think.
No,
it's
I know. Right. I know. It looks like somebody took the White House and stacked it on top of the White House. That's what it looks like.
And then, like they pinched and pulled out
mm-hmm.
the White House. Yeah, yeah. So that's a house that we're working on here. So it's a nice house. It's pretty big.
It's fine.
In 1745, Francis marries Sarah Ellis. Now, this did not have any effect on his drinking and womanizing
mm-hmm.
because. Why would it?
Sure.
That seems crazy. Carried on before. In fact, that year, one of his friends described him as being, quote, like a public reservoir, laying your cock in every private family that has any place fit to receive it. And someone else said that he had, quote, the staying power of a stallion and the impetuosity of a bull.
That was the photo you just showed me? That gentleman?
Yeah. So, you know he's rich.
The man who looked like Gru? He's the one that you think has the staying power of Stallion. Okay, that's good. I mean, good for him. Yeah. Congratulations, really.
I mean, he must have the biggest dick. Incredible. However, his marriage did bring him some more money to spend on his house and grounds, so it was a success. Now, as was fashionable at the time, he had the grounds transformed into a landscape park. Mm-hmm. There's a small river running through the property. It was dammed to form an ornamental lake.
Mm.
Francis had several vessels on said lake, which would enact mock naval battles to entertain his guests. And I will tell you, I've been to your house several times. You have never once put on a mock naval battle.
No, I've mocked a lot of things at this house, but never naval battles. Never.
No, no. So it's time. Time is now.
Mm-hmm.
Here is the lake.
Ooh, very pretty.
So nice.
It really is. The rolling hills. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of trees. That's good. I don't know how like big your ships can get on this lake.
Mm.
It's probably like a 1/8 reenactment.
You know? Yeah, I would say so.
But I'd take it. If you invited me over to your house for a 1/8 reenactment, I'd come. I'd come. Let's see. There are also several buildings dotted around the park in the style of classical Greek and Roman temples. There is a temple of Apollo, a temple of music, a temple of the winds, a round temple. Not really following in theme.
We're doing Greek. We're doing nature. We're doing geometry. This is worshiping everything there is.
And there's a temple of Venus.
Okay.
The last one was designed as a rude joke, as the temple is built on a small mound, which was an artificial Mons of Veneris. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
No, I don't.
I think of like a pubis, maybe.
Oh,
like a lady pubis.
I
don't know. I didn't Google. I don't speak Latin.
I'll have to search that. I'll have to ask Amy what that
means. Amy, can you come down, please?
Clayton's talking about mom's pubis. I don't know what's happening down here.
So it's built up there, and it contains a small chamber called Venus's Parlor, which was accessed by an oval door, which is meant to resemble, quote, the same entrance by which we all come into the world.
Oh.
That's a vagina.
Okay, is that what mom's pubis means? Okay.
That's well, funny. Yeah, but this is Mons Veneris, so I don't know.
Oh, sorry.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Just like a dude.
We may never know.
You know? I got my sex ed from a Catholic school, so I have no idea what we're talking about here.
I got my sex ed from a paper workbook that we had to tear half the pages out of and throw away.
When Aaron and I are intimate, I just lie down and close my eyes and wait till it's over. So I don't know. I don't know what's happening. So the door is meant to resemble a vagina, while the curving walls on either side are like a pair of spread open legs.
Okay.
Above the entrance, there used to be a statue of the god Mercury, perhaps because he, quote, conducts the souls of men to paradise. Or perhaps because Mercury was the standard treatment at that time.
Yeah. And this is the one you don't have
disease.
And this is the one you don't have any photos of, right?
Oh, I've got a photo.
There we go. Okay.
You excited?
Just waiting.
Which photo? It must not be this one. Oh, it's this one. Okay. So I should have shown you. Here's another. I have another photo of the lake. I'll show you that one first.
Mm-hmm.
In case you're wondering about that.
That's great. Nice? Okay. What's the next one?
Okay. So why are you unbuckling your pants?
I'm getting warm. Okay. Yeah. That's.
You get it, right?
I mean, it's in a medieval way. Yeah. That could work.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it doing it for you?
It's doing something.
So that's it. That's the one. That's the sex one. So those are all over the place. So that's great. Now, the year after his marriage, Francis also set up another society for his friends, and he's now set up three. You have set up no societies for me. I don't want to keep drawing comparisons, but just like he seems like a really good friend.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like a really good friend.
I know. Okay. I'll look into the paperwork. I'll see what we can do.
Thank you. This one was a parody of a religious order. Mm-hmm. It was called the Society of St. Francis of Wickham. With Francis himself, of course, playing the part of St. Francis. And the members addressed each other as brothers. Club meetings were said to have included mock rituals and items of a pornographic nature. Much drinking. Quote-unquote, wenching, and banqueting. Each member of the club was allowed to bring a, quote, lady of a cheerful, lively disposition to the meeting. These women, Caroline says, may or may not have been prostitutes. Got a pretty good handle on that one.
No.
They were referred to as nuns.
Okay.
And monks were said to have performed obscene parodies of Christian rites, as well as orgies of drunkenness and debauchery, in which Francis used a communion cup to pour out libations to heathen deities such as Bacchus and Venus. If there is a hell, this is how it opens up.
Yeah. In the coolest way possible.
In fucking sweet ass, sweet ass flames. Francis had several portraits painted of himself in the guise of Saint Francis and of the Pope, in which he is praying before pagan statues, and the Bible is replaced by an erotic novel.
Mm.
Bet Donald Trump would know how to hold that one right side up. Mm-hmm. For several years, Francis rents a genuine ruined medieval abbey at a place I'm going to say is Medmenham. Medmenham.
Yep.
Medmenham. Which is 6 miles from his house, and he has it altered so that he has a ruined medieval abbey altered so that the club's meetings could take place there. And from this time, they call themselves the Monks of Medmenham.
Of course they do.
Yep. However, to the public, they were becoming notorious and were widely known as the Hellfire Club.
Oh. Finally.
In the early 1750s, there's a series of poor harvests leading to poverty among the local people of the area around West Wickham. Francis sought to help them by providing employment. Opposite his house was a high hill made of chalk. Just a big stack of chalk.
Just a bunch of chalk.
And Francis paid the local men to excavate a tunnel and a series of caverns stretching 280 yards underground.
Ooh.
The chalk excavated from this was used to create a new main road to the village.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Public service. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More money to know what to do with. I'm tired of being a heathen. Yeah. Make some chalk roads.
They sound really sturdy. So he does public good works. Also, of course, creates this cave system with grottos, which was another very fashionable feature to have in a landscape park at the time. In total, the cave system that he had them dig consists of, let's see, the entrance hall, the steward's chamber, and Whitehead's cave, through Lord Sandwich's circle.
They named him after a sandwich.
Franklin's Cave, which is named after Benjamin Franklin, was a friend of Dashwood. Visited, of course. The banqueting hall, which was allegedly the largest man-made chalk cavern in the world. The triangle, the miner's cave, and finally across a subterranean river named the Styx. And there lies the final cave, the inner temple. There's a lot happening in this underground space. Rumors spread that the Hellfire Club was using the caverns for its meetings. There's not a lot of evidence for this, though it may have been true in the 1760s when they moved out of the abbey. Certainly, a visitor to the cave 30 years later recorded that, quote, according to local tradition, the club had held its meetings in the large, lofty, circular cavern, which is the furthest point in the caves. Caroline says, I don't have any good photos of the caves, but there are some good ones on the website.
And probably.
Keep going. Gosh, how long is this? The only other thing about Caroline's stories, they're pretty long. They go for a while.
Can you just skim? You can just skim from here.
Yeah. Rumors spread about satanic rituals that the club is performing in 1762. One of the members, John Wilkes, played a prank on the others. In one of the mock religious services that was held in a darkened room, he let loose a live baboon dressed up as a devil. That's not a prank. That's second degree murder.
Let me tell you, you have to get so many more shots from a baboon than you would think. so many more.
There's no rabies in West Wickham.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know if you know this.
Just in the bats.
Because there's no bats.
Just, yeah,
no
well, bats. That makes sense. Makes
there
sense.
Are bats. At least one person there believed it was the actual devil and started begging for forgiveness from the baboon. Wilkes was ejected from the club for the trick, though it sounds like he should have been fucking promoted.
Do you know how hard it is to sneak a baboon club under your clothes all through those tunnels?
Do you know how hard it is to dress a baboon as a devil?
The whole time you're like assuring him under your cloak, this is going to be so funny. I know. Don't freak out. Don't freak out. Don't freak out. This
please be cool. So I will, please. I'll give you $1,000 if you just be cool. It's going to be so funny. So, but no, he's ejected from the club, and thereafter, he and another former member took their revenge on the club by publishing anonymous stories which exaggerated the lecherous and sacrilegious activities of the club. Though I would say a better revenge would be loosing more wild animals into it,
just sealing off the cave with a baboon, like the labyrinth.
Just good luck, fuckers. And David Bowie's there for some reason, and his codpiece is just impressive. In the 1770s, the club fades away, and Sir Francis himself dies in 1781.
Mm.
The caves fall into disrepair, although they are occasionally visited by locals. Then in 1951, the 10th Baronet, also called Sir Francis Dashwood, because names mean nothing, actually decided to restore the caves and opens them up to the public for £1 a visit. Candles provided free.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how much a shilling is worth, and I don't know how much it was worth in 1951.
I don't know how far a candle gets you. It said like 280 yards underground. I
think this motherfucker is bad at business.
That's one of those where like you mark halfway on the candle. Like when it gets down to here, we got to start going back. Trust
me. Guys, we got to go back. So they soon become a popular attraction, especially when the local vicar told a national newspaper that an evil influence emanated from the caves.
Ooh.
And that, quote, my tummy wobbles like a jelly every time I pass the entrance.
Put that on the brochure, man. I swear to God.
I'll start putting this on the ads to my books. My tummy wobbles like a jelly when I read this book. He then went on to preach a sermon denouncing this evil spirit. Since then, many visitors have experienced paranormal phenomena in the caves. One ghost is said to be that of Benjamin Franklin.
Really? That's where he chose to be a ghost?
It's like, listen, I got a lot of options here. I've been all over the world. Like Johnny Cash, I've been everywhere, man. And what I want to be is in this sex cave. It's not the worst option.
Yeah.
Let's see. Another is that of the satirical poet Paul Whitehead, who acted as secretary and steward of the Hellfire Club for a while. Whitehead requested in his will that his heart be placed in an urn and kept in the mausoleum, which stands on top of the hill directly above the caves.
That's such a good one. I never even thought of doing that.
I know. So, like, we could, before we flush your ashes down the Denny's toilet, we could pull out some organs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Where do you want your heart to go?
I mean, I'm a nice guy. I want my organs to be donated to anybody that could use them.
Sure, but
I'm sure there's some clunkers in there, right?
Yeah, we know your body. Yeah,
exactly. There's one or two the doctor's going to be like, there's just not much here, right? Like a lot of mileage on this guy. Those, I'll have to keep that in mind because I there's got to be a few of them, so.
Yeah. Let's think about that.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. Let's see. Apparently, the heart for a while was taken out and shown to visitors and looked like, quote, a shriveled walnut.
Yeah. They'll do that.
Hell. However, the heart is said to have been stolen at some point by an American or Australian soldier. They're all criminals, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's definitely one of the two. And now, because his heart was stolen, Whitehead roams the passageways of the cave, always searching for his heart. Numerous visitors and staff have reported seeing a man in old-fashioned clothing wandering the caves, and when faced, he vanishes into thin air. Much like his heart. Another popular legend is that of Suki, which is short for Susan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read True Blood, I know.
No, that's Sookie. So different.
No, it's the same girl. It really is.
Nah. Anna Paquin was not even near this cave. Nowhere near this cave.
Man, now I get something I got to do this weekend. I got to go watch all the True Bloods again.
Oh, man. I was listening. Okay, so because I... Okay.
We have time. It's fine. We have time.
Okay. So yesterday... So when I applied for this job in Virginia, one of the people...
How far back are you going? I just mentioned Anna Paquin.
A year and 3 months. So when I applied for this job, one of the people on my search committee was this older professor named Bruce. And Bruce, here in rural Virginia, we had a connection, which is that he got his grad degree at Mizzou.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's incredible. And he said, yeah, well, my grandparents have a farm in Catawissa.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, shit, I grew up in Villa Ridge, which is 5 miles from Catawissa. My mm-hmm. parents are in Pacific. He's like, oh, yeah, they now live in Pacific. Mm. So he, like, spent summers in our neck of the woods in Missouri. And then went to grad school at Mizzou. And now, you know, so we bonded. He retired the instant I got there, which I don't take personally.
It's a one-in-one-out thing for guys from Missouri. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, for white guy in Missouri, we got our quota. It's one. So he leaves, but we've kept in touch. He's been a bit of a mentor in some respects, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things he invites me to do is have every Sunday, he and some other old people mm-hmm. get together for beers. I'd say, oh, they're not old. They're like...
They're older than you. That's old.
They just retired. They're older than me, yeah. And they're super great. Like, and one of them is like, been a lobbyist in D.C. for a long time for like the good causes. Mm-hmm. And like one of them is like this other professor. Like they're also smart and great. Like it's been really fun. I'm like, this is great. Anyway, so they invited me to trivia. Where was I going with this? Oh, so they invited me to trivia this week for the first time.
Your story.
Yeah, I know. At a local cidery where they do trivia once a month. And they were like, yeah, you can come play and be on our team. And I was like, I love trivia. Mm. I love trivia. Yep. And we got there and, you know, I'm doing my best, but they're all very smart and they're doing better. But then one of the categories was presidential assassinations.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm like, oh, crack knuckles. I just happen to be a pretty big fan of Stephen Sondheim, and I know all the songs from Assassins by heart. So this is going to go pretty well. And I announce this at the table, and they every single one of them is like, what is Assassins? I was the only one who knew it. So it's very exciting for me. So anyway, so long story short, I got three of the questions right because of my Assassin's knowledge. One of the answers, which was Stephen Sondheim himself. Mm. I did great. And everyone's like, thank you so much for coming. I said, I did it. Then I went back and I was like, I want to listen to Assassins again. It's been a while. And I'm listening to a song from Assassins. And it's is it Charlie Gâteau? It's a Charlie Gâteau song. Ballad of Charlie Gâteau. And I'm listening to the voice, the guy singing, who's playing Charlie Gâteau. And I'm like, this guy sounds so familiar. And I look at the Spotify and I see his name. I'm like, I don't know that name. So I IMDb him. And it is the guy, the actor, who played the governor?
Governor?
Is that a role? In True Blood? The guy that that Hot Eric reported up to.
Oh, yeah. The vampire governor.
The bony-faced big guy. Yeah, the vampire governor. Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, holy. And so I thought, oh my God, this guy was in True Blood.
Right.
I should watch True Blood again. That's how it all came around. You told me it'd be worth it. You told me we had time.
Mm-hmm. We did. That was.
You still feel that way?
9 minutes.
Was it good? Anyway, we should do a live. We should do a live watch of an episode of True Blood. I tell you, Sam Murdoch, the intern, keeps telling me every time we bring this up, he knows how to make it so that we could do a live watch of a show or movie with people and do it at the same time and comment and stuff.
Like Mystery Science Theater type stuff?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I always say like, oh, if only anyone ever knew, like, because it would be fun to watch. You know,
sure.
Like Man from Snowy River, True Blood, any Disney movie, like all this.
Anything you don't want to listen to, but do want to hear us talk over top of the entire time.
Yeah.
You should totally tune in.
And I always lament in the Discord channel that, we should really find a way to make this happen.
Right.
And every time I do, Sam types, mostly in all caps, I keep telling you, I can make this happen. So, I don't know. Maybe this is the year. I don't know. Maybe season two is when we do one of those.
Yeah, we should ask Sam if he knows how to do that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, where are we? Oh, another legend is that Sookie, also known as a white lady. She's a 16 or 17 year old barmaid at the local George and Dragon Inn.
Uh-huh. This is literally Suki. I don't like.
I mean, it's got to be St. George. she was very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Checks out. Many men sought her affections. I mean, that's the whole show.
Yep.
That's. But Suki wanted to marry into the nobility.
Uh huh. Yep.
And rejected the advances of her male admirers. She begins dating a local aristocrat. Is that Eric?
I think it is.
Because Bill was a poor person.
Yeah, but he was. Yeah. I think it's also Eric in this regard.
Eric is so handsome.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God. That fucking Skarsgård. And one day she receives a message from her beau to meet him in the caves one night wearing her best white dress as a wedding gown.
Oh. She's
very excited.
Absolutely.
It's happening. She arrives in her white dress, but it turns out the note was a hoax. It was from three village boys who were waiting for her and started teasing and tormenting her.
Oh.
Suki threw stones at the boys. One of the boys, laughing, threw one back at her. That stone knocked her unconscious.
Mm.
This scared the boys. They carried her back to the inn, but she died during the night.
Oh.
What a terrible way to... That's a bad story.
Dead of a prank.
I mean, on one hand,
yeah.
Very successful.
Absolutely,
prank.
Yes. We totally wow. Got her, guys.
She is said to haunt the caves, particularly the banqueting hall,
mm-hmm.
where many people report having seen a girl in a white dress. There are also regular experiences of poltergeist activity in the form of stones being thrown and footsteps in the gravel. And monastic chanting is said to have been heard coming from the inner temple. People in the caves have experienced strange changes in temperature. And if there's one thing I know from all the billboards of Merrimack Caverns, going down Highway 40, it's that caves are only 60 degrees. Mm-hmm. They're a cool 60 degrees. They will never not be anything other than a cool 60 degrees. So that is weird. And whispering in their ears and hands on their shoulders.
Ooh.
In the year of our Lord 2005, the TV series Most Haunted filmed an episode in which they held an all-night vigil in the caves. They reported numerous paranormal experiences, including the sounds of crying babies and stones hitting gates. The show's medium claimed to sense a young woman dressed in white, likely Suki,
mm-hmm.
as well as numerous women dressed in nun's habits, saying, doom me to oblivion or whatever. And that is the story of the Hellfire Caves. In, what did we say? West Wickham? Is that right?
Yeah, England somewhere.
Somewhere over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, what do you think?
Oh, I have a lot to say.
We've got time.
Just very excited. Just very excited to be back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, feels like we're doing it. All right. Well, I guess we should say that, gosh, how does this part go?
Yeah. Is this a sit back this and watch tough. This one unravel?
Caroline did not put the end credits in her scripts like I like. So that's a demerit, I guess. Is This a Ghost? It's a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes were not taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team consists of Kai Valonis, Jen Jones, and Sam Murdoch. And merch is handled for us now by, excuse me, I remember, I'm just having indigestion, Fox and Quill Studio.
Sorry, Fox and who?
Fox and
Quill Fox Studio. And, oh, I'm sorry. He's dying. I'm sorry, guys. He's actually dying.
I've got this massive bubble in my throat, and it hurts really bad, but it's Fox and Quill Studio, and they've got some really fun new merch, and you have to check it out. It's really, really good. There's the drummer of Tedman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Necrodrumicon is there, and the drum has the belly button.
Perfect.
As requested. God, what else? I'm going to see. The I Play With Haunted Dolls merch is out, which is fun. And I think my new favorite. Remember we talked about spite ashes?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And just scattering them around just in spite. We have some new merch designed by Fox and Quill Studios. It's a Rest in Spite shirt, and it has a smashed urn spilling ashes onto a floor saying Rest in Spite, and it's really good. So go check those out at isthisghost.com. You can check out our shop, and we would love the support, honestly, if you would buy some stuff. That would mean a lot to us. If you like this, we're still doing all the extra bonus stuff over at the Ghost Plus. It's been pretty good, Ryan. Yeah, we released, the last thing we released was a Smith show where Ryan and I talked about keel hauling. Patrick, you ever heard about keel hauling?
I have. It's the most disgusting way to be killed at sea.
It is horrifying. Horrifying, horrifying, and pretty funny when we do it. So go check that out. Gosh, any other thoughts, comments, concerns, Patrick?
I'm good.
What do you want to see? So what's like the one thing, like if you had to pick, like season two is here. Mm-hmm. What's the one thing we didn't do enough of or didn't do at all in season one that season two is our chance? What do you want to see here you haven't seen before? Go.
Oh man, probably more costumes. Gotta be more costumes, right?
For us?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I feel an Abe Lincoln thing coming on, so. And I don't know. You know, the Abe Lincoln costume for this show would be just you being naked.
Absolutely, yeah. Maybe maybe I start off the stovepipe hat, and that's about as far as we get.
And we'll see how comfortable we get from there. Yeah. Well, if you want to see Patrick naked as Abe Lincoln, let us know. You can reach out to us. That's how it goes. It is this goes at gmail.com. It's been a long night. We got to go. We're going to wrap this up. Please listen next time. Please tell your friends and families. And I don't know. In the meantime, until next week, I would say, what is this about? Don't impersonate the Pope during sex. Otherwise, it's almost guaranteed you'll be the next topic on next week's Is This a Ghost?